Hi, podcasters. This is Brooke with Let's Talk Art. Today is a very special episode of Let's Talk Art. As you may know, I've been working on a book about a very obscure 20th century art dealer named Hugh Lane. Don't worry, no one else has heard of him either. So when I found someone who's actually written about him herself, I was super stoked. I had to have her on the podcast. Kathleen Dixon Donnelly writes a blog called Such Friends, which includes the same cast of characters I'm writing about. She comes to us all the way from Birmingham, UK. Enjoy. That's so cool. You talk just like my mother. That's so funny. I was telling her, I was like, I'm going to be talking to a Pittsburgh person. She does. I never noticed it, though, until I heard her pick up on it, and I heard her point out the differences, but I wouldn't have picked up any differences, but just since she pointed it out, I can pick them up now.
Well, that's good, because a real thick Pittsburgh accent is really disgusting. It's really bad. And we refer to those people as yinzers.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you're always saying yins, the word yins.
Yeah.
To be honest, because my whole family, you know, is from Pittsburgh, and my aunts and uncles on both sides, they used to say yuns. And my mother and father, I don't know why, they never went to college, they weren't particularly educated,
right.
They used to say to us, yuns ain't got no fetchings up because yuns use the word yuns. It's like a swear word in our house. We were never allowed to say it. And we came back once from my grandfather's, and I said, Aunt Jean says yuns. How could she do that? My mother said, I know, ignore it. Just pay no attention. It really does sound really low. And there's, you know, it's just a real thick, ugly accent. So your mother should be glad that she escaped it.
No, I think you guys both sound great. And you actually sound a lot like my aunt.
She's from there too.
Yeah, she is. But yeah, I wouldn't have picked up on anything beforehand, but now that I know the way that you guys say things, I can kind of pick it up a little bit. But I think
as long as we've been here, I'm getting better at placing where people are from in the UK.
Uh-huh.
You know, because the accents, I mean, you know, it really plays. And Birmingham is considered one of the worst. It's like the Pittsburgh accent. They just say, they make fun of it all the time. Mommies say, are you right? So we haven't picked up that yet. And my husband's from Dublin, of course, so he said, you know, he has this lovely lilt that all the girls think is just adorable.
Right.
So he lived in Pittsburgh for a while, but he never picked up a Pittsburgh accent, thank God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, how did you guys meet?
How did we meet?
Yeah.
In a pub where you're going to meet an Irishman, you know? Actually, next month it'll be 26 years.
Oh my gosh. Congratulations.
I know, that's what I say. Oh my God.
That's awesome.
I know. Didn't count on that.
Yeah.
But yeah, we were in a pub in Dublin. It's a nice pub. If you ever get there, I'll tell you.
Yeah.
I can't guarantee the same results. But
Right.
Yeah, so it's been a long time. But I went and moved over there for a while, and then we lived in Pittsburgh for 6 years, mm-hmm. not 5 years, and then we moved to Florida
mm-hmm.
for 6 years, and then we moved here 14 years ago.
Wow.
I know, it's like you turn around and say, oh my God,
yeah.
How did this happen? I didn't think we'd be here this long.
Right.
And where do you live? You're in South Carolina.
North Carolina, Charlotte. Yeah. We used to go to...
Is it anywhere near Asheville?
Yeah, it's about 3 hours away, maybe. Maybe less than that.
We have friends, and they're from like three totally different parts of my life, so they don't know each other at all. But they all retired to North Carolina.
Uh-huh.
I don't know why. And they're not far from each other, I don't think. But Asheville, I've always wanted to get to because, you know, my original research was about Maxwell Perkins, the editor.
Uh-huh.
And he was the editor of Scott Fitzgerald, Hemingway, and Thomas Wolfe.
Oh, yeah,
from
yeah.
Nashville, obviously.
Yeah, there's a lot
and,
of stuff.
In fact, I wrote to the house, you know, because his house is a museum thing. You see,
right.
They wanted copies of the book about Max Perkins, but
right.
No, never heard that. but And I've never managed to get there. And I hear it's a beautiful country, you know, at the mountains.
Oh, it is.
And Fitzgerald lived near there for a while, too.
Yeah, Fitzgerald lived there, and Zelda, I think Zelda, the hospital she stayed in is in Asheville. And I think that's
where she died.
That's still in existence, or it might be a historical museum type.
Yeah.
I don't know, but I think it's still in existence. I've been there probably when I was younger, but I don't remember a whole lot about it. But everyone talks about it. It's super cool.
Yeah. So did you grow up in North Carolina?
Yeah, I was born in upstate New York, but we moved here when I was 5. My dad worked for IBM, and so a lot of the IBMers came down here then. So I've
Is
grown
that
up
like
here.
The Research Triangle?
I'm not sure. It's a big IBM. There's a lot of IBM people here.
Yeah.
There's some in Cary, North Carolina as well, which is near Raleigh.
We used to come down to Ocracoke in the summers.
Oh, cool.
My previous partner and I.
Right.
And we used to drive down from Pittsburgh, 13 hours.
Wow.
First time we drove to Kitty Hawk,
uh-huh.
and then kept going to at the tip. I can't remember the name where the lighthouse is. And then we said, "Oh, look, here's a ferry. Here's this place, Oak Brook. I wonder what that's like." And we went over, and we just loved it. So we went back there for a couple of weeks, like each summer.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really different place, but boy, I bet if you go there now, it's like covered with Holiday Inns and Hiltons or something.
Yeah, it's definitely changed. At least Charlotte has for sure since I moved here. I keep getting astounded at everything that's changed. It looks like a different city, but I'm not entirely sure about those areas because I don't go there very often.
Yeah,
I think I've been there.
It's not on the way to anywhere.
Right. You have to.
Nice
yeah. Yeah, but I hear about people who go there a lot, and they are always talking about it. But yeah, it's great weather, and it's my parents who've lived in the north and lived in the Midwest. Or my dad lived in the Midwest for most of his life, and they talk about just the winters. And when I've been in the winters up north, it's just painfully
Pittsburgh
cold.
Pittsburgh has bad winters, I know.
Yeah.
Well, if we get over to the States for a length of time, maybe we'll try and do in North Carolina.
Yeah.
Swing by. Yeah.
Yeah, we should definitely meet up for coffee or something.
Yeah, I have to confess to you, too, I have never listened to a podcast in my life.
Oh, that's...
Obviously, I've never heard yours.
That's okay. And this was completely new to me too. I had no idea I didn't ever listen to podcasts. I didn't know anything about them. It was my boyfriend's idea, and he was like, "Oh, you should start a podcast." I was like, "Oh yeah, I don't know what that is."
People have told me that too. You know, I started out as a print person, like mm-hmm. I was a typesetter.
Yeah.
And I'm just amazed I can even get online. So it just
right.
Totally. I haven't tried it yet, so I admire you for taking the plunge.
So yeah, it was all just. I think neither of us, my boyfriend or I, really kind of knew what we were doing, and we just kind of figured it out as we went. And I certainly don't.
Yeah.
I certainly don't have it all mastered yet. But at least I can.
How long have you been doing it?
Maybe 2-3 years.
Oh.
So it's just a lot of fun, and it's so funny because I'm an introvert, and talking to people that I don't know is like a nightmare like a nightmare for me. And just to kind of like get myself out there and like talk to people that I don't know, I'm like, this is fun. I like this.
Yeah.
So
well, it has an anonymity.
Yeah.
Feeling, you know,
yeah.
No one can see you.
Yeah, exactly. I can do it in my pajamas, which I'm not, I'm wearing it. But, I'm sorry.
And so it's about art history?
My podcast is about art. It's called Let's Talk Art with Brooke. And it basically, the inspiration was that Hugh Lane was the inspiration for it, really.
Mm-hmm.
Because he did these coffee conversations that, which stupid me, I thought were unique to him, that he invented it. And I was like, oh, that is the coolest thing ever. And then, so I wanted to recreate it. And then I find out that all galleries, all museums do this. They all have coffee conversations about exhibitions. So it's not a new thing. It's not, you know, it's not Hugh Lane's original thing. But
so he did that where?
He did that at the the Dublin City Gallery does that now, and I was thinking that he did that. but I think it's just the gallery that does it.
Yeah, I think so, because there wasn't actually a building when he was alive. I mean, that
right,
was part
right.
Of the
that that's a new yeah. thing. Yeah, they all kind of met at Lady Gerner's house.
But he was head of the municipal gallery for a while.
Right, right. Yeah. Right, so yeah, yeah. So the Dublin City Gallery was not in existence. But yeah, but he was the municipal.
He was quite an interesting character, that's for sure.
Yeah, and I just think he would be like the greatest like cartoon. Just his like his nervousness, and just I can see him just kind of like running around dusting things, and so and it just made me laugh.
So you just want to chat about him?
Yes. Yeah.
About Elaine.
Yeah.
And if it's okay with you,
sure.
If somewhere in there we can mention my blog.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
WordPress. Just,
yeah.
Who knows? Maybe I'll get two visitors.
Yeah, totally. Totally.
And also, the other thing I'd like to be able to bring in, if it's okay,
mm-hmm.
is one of the guys I'm researching now
mm-hmm.
with the idea of doing a biography
mm-hmm.
of him.
Mm-hmm.
There is one, but it's not very good, so I don't want to do it.
Yeah.
Is this guy John Quinn?
Yeah. Lady Gregory had an affair with him.
Yeah, I know. he was like younger than her too. But he and Elaine were friends, you
uh-huh.
know. And
yeah.
I was just going back through my notes, and there was like a lot. They were rivals, actually, for not for Lady Gregory, but for art, particularly with Augustus John.
Yeah,
they fought over pieces of this. And I just found him to be this John Quinn to be an interesting character, because when I did my research about all the different groups, there he is just in all these pictures.
Yeah.
And it would just say John Quinn. I think, who the hell is he? He's with Ezra Pound and James Joyce and Max Ford. And it turned out that he was behind financially, but also emotionally, behind almost all of them. And so he kind of interacts with all four of my groups.
Right.
So that's why I've been kind of working on some stuff about him. And to me, I mean, he was an interesting person.
Yeah.
But besides that, and I think this is true of Elaine too, is that they were both supporters of the arts.
Yeah.
You know, and God knows we need them now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think particularly Quinn had some really creative ways
mm-hmm.
of supporting the arts. So rather than just buying art, which of course is good,
mm-hmm.
but he would buy manuscripts to keep the writer going.
Yeah.
You know, and he a lot of times would support the artist as well as the art. And I just think I've done some presentations about supporters of the arts and, you know, looking back to history and finding out what else can we do besides begging the government to throw money at it. You
right.
know?
Oh yeah, totally. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, more creative way. So to me that's, you know, a really good kind of modern day angle with both of them really.
Yeah, yeah, I totally agree. Yeah,
yeah.
I don't think the government should be involved at all, really.
Yeah. Well, the Abbey Theater, who, of course, you know, Lady Gregory founded, that was, what I understand is, I've never found detail on this, that it was the first theater in the Western world, the Western world, to get a government subsidy.
Oh, really? I didn't know
that. Yeah, because she went to Dublin Castle and said, give us some money. She was good.
Yeah.
She was really good. She could get blood from a stump.
Definitely.
And so it's had a long, and now it just keeps begging for money. You know, the Abbey's kind of, they're doing okay now, I think, but they've been sort of up and down in their years since, what is it, it's over 100 years. So, and he, well, Hugh Lane was never really part of that, but he spent a lot of time at her house.
Yeah.
I mean, really, for being aunt and nephew, they were very close, actually.
Yeah, they're very close. And he hung out with all of her friends, and I think that's kind of what really hooked me. Because
mm-hmm.
I was like, I've never heard of Hugh Lane, but I've heard of George Bernard Shaw. I've heard about John Butler Yeats. I've read about them in English class. And these are like paragons of English class that are like behaving badly. And they're just,
mm-hmm.
and I just love that. I think that's what
helped
me.
Well, that's you know, my research wasn't so much about any of their works, like Yeats's poetry or anything, but it was about, you know, the relationships, the friendships in these groups. And when I give these presentations, people come to me and they go, you make them seem like real people.
Yeah, yeah.
People, really. They go, I didn't have to make any of this up.
Right,
it's
right.
Amazing as it is, yeah.
Yeah, totally.
But I think sometimes in education that gets left out, you know.
Yeah.
I know even, like, you know, Tony's from Ireland, and he can recite, he never went to college, but he can recite Yeats, you know, they had it at school. And his son went with us when we this is a long time ago, we went to Cool Park and to Lyra and these places because I was taking pictures. And James had been studying Yeats in school, but they never mentioned, like, his Maud Gonne or, you know, friendships or his kids and things like that. It was just all memorized the poetry, you know?
Right.
And I think their personal lives are even more interesting sometimes.
Oh, totally, totally.
Yeah, than the work.
Yeah.
And that was sure true of that group, because there were some in that group, like George Moore and
George
Russell.
Yeah.
You know, they were okay. Not great.
Right.
But their lives were really interesting.
Yeah, they were great.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
But that was the part that I focused on.
Yeah, I think, that's what intrigued me. These are, like, real people who had, like, real lives, not completely, I'm not going to say not like mine, because I don't have a life like that, but I mean, like, wow.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was funny because I was thinking that I had this idea. I have these ideas of all these characters, like how what they're like when I read about them. But then they're like often completely different. Like Maud Gonne, I completely thought she was just like a complete flake, and she was just using William Butler Yeats, and I'm sure she was. But I mean, I read one of her writings, and it's actually very good. And
she was something.
She's not
6 feet tall too.
Really,
she couldn't stand Hugh Lane. She thought he was horrible. She called him a cur.
Yeah, I did.
Because she felt that he'd gotten the knighthood based on pretending to give Dublin the gallery.
And then taking it back.
Yeah, so there's a lot of letters between her and Quinn.
Yeah.
Where she complains about him, you know. And Quinn kind of liked him. But they were, you know, rivals for a lot of, in terms of paintings and things like that. And they didn't have the same taste. Lane thought Quinn's Picassos were rubbish. And he was, Lane was more interested in like the older art, was
right, the masters.
Quinn was particularly interested in living artists. At one point he said, I'm only going to buy works from living artists. Well, except Matisse.
I don't like Matisse.
another one. Yeah, well, really good ones, you know.
Yeah.
God bless both of them for putting money into it, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I think.
Now listen, I'm going to warn you. Sound wise, I've got a very needy cat named Lady Augusta Gregory.
No, that's awesome.
On my chest right now.
That is fine.
She's figured out how to sleep on my chest, so there may be a meow in the background at some point.
No worries. Well, if you have, it's a meow from Lady Gregory, then I think that'd be awesome.
I know, she's Lady Gregory, and Willie Yeats. He should come answer brother. Fairly soon too. So just in case. You hear the sound in the background.
No, that's okay. So now tell me who you were researching first when you first got into this.
Okay, well, my research that I did in Dublin City University,
mm-hmm.
was about basically writers who hung out together.
Mm-hmm.
So Yeats and Lady Gregory and the whole group that's known as the Irish Literary Renaissance,
okay. uh-huh.
that founded the Abbey Theatre.
Mm-hmm.
And then Virginia Woolf and the Bloomsbury Group. So cool. Her sister Vanessa and a lot of other, and some of those were painters and writers. And Gertrude Stein, my fellow Pittsburgher, and the Americans in Paris, her and her partner, Alice Bitoklis and Hemingway Fitzgerald and all those.
Right.
And then the cream of the crop, Dorothy Parker and the Algonquin Roundtable.
Mm-hmm.
So they were all, there were four groups, and they were either side of World War I.
Mm-hmm.
So two before the war and then two after.
Mm-hmm.
And what I was looking at was the relationships among, you know, the writers and artists, like how they got along and things like that. So I was like a pig in the mud. It was just heaven. I spent years reading biographies of these 31 fascinating people.
Mm-hmm.
So, but then once I finished the academic part of it, then it got even more interesting because
right.
now, like, when I write or do presentations, it's really more about who slept with whom.
Right, right.
Than anything else, so.
Yeah, like soap operas.
They were very interesting characters.
Yeah. Well, it's so funny because I hear people like complaining about, like, oh, I have to read, you know, Hemingway, or I have to read, you know, this for English class. And I'm like, I never read anything for English class. I purposely did not read whatever they asked me to. And that was more of a harm to myself that I found out. But now I'm just like, oh my gosh, I would love to. That'd be awesome.
Yeah. We read Hemingway. Mm-hmm. In high school, but I don't think we read Fitzgerald.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I knew about him, but I didn't even know they knew each other.
Yeah.
There was nothing about them being friends.
No.
And my first research, which was for my master's in business, was about Maxwell Perkins, the editor.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at it from the point of view, you know, how should you be a manager of creative people? Because he had to manage these three pretty feisty artists,
right.
writers.
Right.
So that one, manager is muse. So I started with that. And then when I knew I wanted to do something about creative people. And I liked the idea of the one, I'd always been fascinated by the ones who hung out together, you know.
Yeah.
And I already knew stuff about Hemingway and Fitzgerald. So I figured, well, let's start with that. It cuts down on the amount you have to read, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then looked for other groups at the same time. So.
Right.
And then it's called Such Friends, based mm-hmm. on the
Yeats poem.
Yeats. Yeah, and say my glory was, I had such friends.
Right.
So that seems
to, that's an awesome,
you know,
quote.
Tie them all together.
Yeah.
And John Quinn had such friends.
Yeah, he did.
A whole bunch of them. Yeah.
So, but I think it's always really interesting, and this has always kind of fascinated me, just kind of the dynamic between, like, business people and creative people,
mm-hmm.
just because they're such different breeds, but they need each other. So, and I just think
yeah.
it's, I think it's...
And it's become such a hot topic. I mean, I finished, and it took me forever to do it, but I finished that thesis about Perkins in 1983.
Mm-hmm.
And since then, there's just been so much written about it because the creative industries, you know, have become hugely important. And it was always, oh, Maxwell Perkins, he was such a terrible businessman. Well, Scribner's has got a whole lot of titles, you know, that they just keep reissuing all the time.
Right,
because
right.
of the work that he did. So, and he had studied, Perkins himself studied economics at Harvard.
Wow.
So he wasn't, I mean, you can see why they said he wasn't a good businessman, you know, because, and Wolf was the perfect example, because he was just so huge, you know, it was hard to tame him. But in the long run, I think, you know, Scribner's is still doing pretty good. Like, they're
yeah.
up by somebody else now. But, you know, those Hemingway and Fitzgerald books are just, and others that he did, Marcia Davenport, and the one who wrote The Yearling, Marjorie Kinnon Rawlings, she was one of his writers, too. So mm-hmm. he helped create a lot of classics for them.
Right, right.
So God bless Max Perkins.
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
Yeah.
So something else that I was curious about, Sarah Cecilia Harrison, there seems to be like a lot of people think differently about her. I like
who?
Her. Sarah Cecilia Harrison.
I don't know her.
Cecilia Harrison, she's the one who was in love with Hugh Lane and said that they were engaged.
Oh, okay. Ooh, I didn't know that one.
Oh, yeah. They were really good friends. They were really good. She hung out with the Irish Literary Revival. And and they said, and I don't know, and this was like when I first started reading about Hugh Lane, and I didn't really know much about anything. But I was like, they love each other. And I was like, and he loves her. And I was like, and if I were to just look, take a glance at him, I'd think he was gay. But he really he loves her. And I've always had that kind of in the back of my head, and it's uninformed because I don't know anything. I didn't really know anything about it. I do know more now, but now I think people in his camp think she was like a nuisance who was kind of like, oh, she's just wanting money or something like that. But
yeah.
but I and honestly and I like I said I don't know a whole lot about it. But my gut feeling when I was reading the stuff reading. The writings of her and reading writings about Hugh, that I was thinking that, oh, well, they love each other. And so I got in touch with a relation of hers that's living now.
Uh-huh.
And she's like, yeah, she really loved him, but she's like, I don't think the feelings were returned as much. So I don't really know the truth of
was she from Dublin?
Yes. Yes.
She knew her there.
Yeah, she was an artist. And she actually did the painting of Hugh Lane, or did a painting of Hugh Lane. And so I was just curious if you had any thoughts on it. But
seriously, I know she hadn't cropped up. I had to go back through my notes and see if there was something hidden about her in the stuff about the Irish group.
Yeah, they were...
So she was a painter. She wasn't, like, in the theater. Because there were a lot of the actresses in the theater who were hanging on to all these guys too.
Right, right. Now she was a painter, and I think she was just friends with Hugh, and I'm not sure and I'm not really sure what her relationship to the others were. But I know that her and Hugh were pretty good friends, and they're very good friends. They were, I've always had in my head that they were more, I really didn't know. And I was talking to her daughter, her relative, that had some ideas similar to mine, but she was hesitant to say them because she was like, because of, I guess, the common feeling about her, I guess they call her Celia Harrison. I read the book on Hugh Lane, but he was kind of like basically saying, oh, she's kind of a nuisance too. We can't really believe her, but I believe her. And I think she's right.
I'm going through my notes about the group itself at that time, mm-hmm. after 1906, and I'm not picking up Ophelia or Harrison.
Huh.
Interesting.
So
Hugh got around, huh?
Yeah, yeah. Well,
Quinn definitely got around. He was bopping everything and stuff. including Lady Gaga. And he and Yates shared a couple.
Yeah. Oh, that's... Yeah, Yates was pretty funny.
Others, yeah.
Yates was quite a womanizer.
Yeah. But, you know, they were always very discreet in those days about putting things, that's why with the letters, a lot of times you have to read between the lines, you know?
Yeah.
Because they don't want to put on paper.
Right, right.
What's really going on.
Yeah.
There's a book about, it's about Ulysses and the trials, you know, there were two legal cases against Joyce's Ulysses,
yeah,
for obscenity, and the first one was Quinn, you know,
mm-hmm.
and the guy who wrote this book just hated John Quinn. He figures he screwed up the whole thing, which he's partially right, but anyway, in there, he says all these, he says some good things about it. He says that, you know, he supported artists, but he says that, you know, he dismissed these women that he was having these affairs with and everything, and he never acknowledged them publicly and stuff like that. And I thought, but yeah, you know, but in those days, he wasn't going to tell people he was sleeping with these
right,
women because
right.
it would ruin their reputation.
Yeah.
I mean, he was a womanizer, but a gentleman.
Yeah. He was a smart womanizer.
He wasn't going to trash them. Think what people would say if
yeah.
they knew. Think
yeah.
what they, you know, they would think he was cool, but the women would be like sluts, you know?
Yeah.
So in that time, but there are some letters, but even then, a lot of them, he's discreet, let's say.
Right, right.
That makes it harder, you know, when you're doing the research, you're trying to read between the lines and see what was really going on.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's funny because James Joyce, I'm not entirely sure, but I was thinking that James Joyce was involved in the whiskey project, that, like the Perse whiskey that we're kind of bringing back. But my boyfriend says he wasn't. But I see all these references to him, and I know that he sent I know that Lady Gregory sent him to medical school.
She sent him some money.
Yeah,
and it was George Russell, actually, who said to her, I met this guy, he's good, you know, give him some cash so he can leave. he was outside of my groups, but obviously he pops up a lot, so I know a little bit about him.
Mm-hmm.
So he went from Dublin to Zurich,
mm-hmm.
I think.
Yeah.
But he came back when his mother died. And then he went, I think, to Trieste, and that's when he went with, what's her name? Nora Barnacle.
Mm-hmm.
She met her, and he said, come on, let's get out of here. And so they went, and he was teaching English and stuff. But, you know, for a while, for like a year or so, he ran a movie theater in Dublin.
Oh, wow.
Who knew?
That's funny.
I know. Isn't that weird? But when you think about it, like, movies were like a brand new thing, and
yeah.
he was quite experimental, so I guess.
Yeah.
But then, eventually, they moved to Paris.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where he was put in touch with Quinn. I think it was Ezra Pound Vancouver, who was a real nutcase, and Ezra Pound, obviously, knew Yeats. So, you know, through Ezra Pound, Quinn was funding. He helped fund some things Ezra Pound did, but also Joyce was sending, buying up parts and pieces of the manuscript in order to keep Joyce going. So, you know, once again, he was kind of in the background there supporting different people.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so neat.
But Joyce was a real piss face. See, he was never really a part of a group.
Mm-hmm.
He would go out, you know, and get drunk in pubs and bar cafes in Paris and everything, and but he was never, it was never like a group around him. He was kind of a, you know, a solo on his own, and a Nora.
Yeah.
He didn't bother to get married until the kids were like in their 30s. You know? He just kept telling people, oh, yeah, we're married. So, yeah, so he stayed kind of separate. He had friends. He had people around him. He was pretty miserable a lot. But he wasn't healthy either. He had, you know, a lot of eye problems and everything, so he's grumpy. But there were supporters of him, and he was social. But he just wasn't in one of these group like salons, you know, where people would sit around and chat.
I think
kind of like being just on his own.
Yeah.
Being the genius by himself. Dorothy Parker said in Paris she saw him on the street, but he didn't say anything because maybe he was afraid he might drop a pearl. and Gertrude Stein hated him. They only met once, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Just turned up their noses at each other.
Yeah, I just think that's so cool how that, yeah, like they all hung out together and just in different, in pubs and things like that, like stuff
yeah.
like we do today.
Well, you know, and a lot of times there's this thing of, like, there's this guy who I follow him on Facebook, and he wrote this book because he was just amazed that The Wasteland and Ulysses were published in the same year, 1922.
Mm-hmm.
And he did this whole thing about 1922. And I thought, you know, I can do that with any year in my grouping.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Between like 1897, 1930. Because there were always things happening.
Right.
And, you know, the fact that like Hemingway and Fitzgerald knew each other, or Ezra Pound and Yeats, there were a whole lot of people.
Right, yeah.
London did not have 10 million people.
Right.
It only had so many Irish, and they all hung out together, you know.
Yeah.
And Dublin was like a backwater, you know. It was like, oh, God, do I have to, to go to Dublin?
Yeah.
Paris, obviously, was big and doing a lot. But those who spoke English, there were the Brits and the Americans, and they kind of stayed together, you know. So it wasn't that hard. And even like the Algonquin Roundtable in Manhattan, although it wasn't that, somebody said to them, don't they ever see anybody else? You know, they're always together.
Mm-hmm.
And but so a lot of these people were kind of in fairly tight circles. I mean, it wasn't like now where like half my friends are back in Pittsburgh, you know, and I'm here online with them. So in that case, it's not too surprising.
Right.
But their paths crossed.
Right.
But then when they do know each other and they get to be friends, and, you know, the texture of their relationships has been when it gets really interesting, as opposed to, you know, Hemingway was at this pub the same day Man Ray walked in or something like that. It's more that the ongoing relationships that get to be really interesting, and how it influenced your work, too.
Right, right.
You can't always draw a direct line, but, you know, just the fact that they were sharing experiences.
Yeah, yeah.
And influence, I think, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's really cool. And I think that that like Lady Gregory, I don't know, it's so interesting that she was so much older than they were, but she hung out with them. She invited them all to their house, to her house, and
yes,
they all hung out there.
Well, see, that's interesting because what my research found, the main thing I found out, or the main thing I developed as part of the research, is in all four of these groups, it was pretty consistent that there were these roles. Like, there was always a star.
Mm-hmm.
Yeats, Virginia Woolf, Gertrude Stein, Dorothy Parker.
Mm-hmm.
But the star always had, like, a hostess, somebody who took care of them.
Mm-hmm.
And Lady Gregory was the hostess.
She
invited everybody to her house. And Vanessa Bell, Virginia's sister,
right,
was, like, you know, the Earth Mother. She took care of everybody. And then Alice B. Toklas, you know, queen of codependency. And she handled everything. And Dorothy Parker had Robert Benchley, who took care of her every time she tried to commit suicide. And then around them, there were these consistent different roles.
Right.
And one of the ones in each group, and Lady Gregory was both the hostess and what I called the link. because there was always somebody older who linked them to, like, the establishment.
Right.
Because at the time they were in the group, they were starting out. You know, when Virginia was really in the Bloomsbury group, she published her first novel when it ended. So it was like they were young writers and artists kind of starting out, but there was always somebody, but usually a bit older, who could introduce them. Mm-hmm. And Lady Gregory, she had the connections, you know, to get the theater started.
Right.
She said, well, who is that English woman, Mrs. Horniman? She got the building. I started the theater. And so there was usually somebody like that. So the Bloomsbury group was Roger Fry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was a painter, but he was an art critic and put on the second post-impressionist show and these things. So, you know, he was the one connecting them to the larger art world, basically. And that was important, you know, for groups like that they had to have somebody. Otherwise, they'd just be working on their own and no one would know, you know.
Right.
So that's an important person to have in the group. So if you're going to hang out with a bunch of artists, get some older who knows what they're doing, you know, and say to them, get me published.
That makes sense. That makes sense. But yeah, I was telling my boyfriend, I was like, yeah, I'm gonna set this in a cafe, and they're gonna Lady Gregory's gonna be there. And he's like, Lady Gregory would not be going to a cafe. She's having
them. She invited them to her house.
She invited them to her house.
I'm like, and even Gertrude Stein, she didn't go to like the pub. She had them come to her. Yeah. And part of it was that women really weren't supposed to be in pubs and bars in those days too much. So, and even that's how, and I never. At one point, I actually had a publisher ask me to do this, and I didn't really want to do it, but a history of salons.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's cool.
The little bit that I did research was they kind of started in the, like, 18th century, and with the French Revolution, it was when there was a lot of political discussion. You know, the French, they love to sit around and talk about politics.
Right.
And the women couldn't go to the cafes or whatever, so they would invite the wealthy women, would invite these politicians and philosophers and whatever to their houses to have these salons where they could take part in the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Virginia Woolf wasn't going to go hang out at a pub,
right.
But they would come to her house. Now, Dorothy Parker, she was happy to hang out. It was prohibition, and she was getting drunk every day. So they would go to the hotel. No one was coming to her place. She
was
a mess. So by the 20s, it was a little different.
Yeah.
But, that really was part of it. And Lady Gregory, she wanted everybody to come. You have so much work to do. Come to my house for summer.
Yeah.
And she'd lock Yates in a room, you know, and bring him food. So he couldn't go out. She took very good care of them all.
Yeah.
I think that's
so cool. I just love that. That's so cool. Just the dynamics between them all, and just
It'd be great to be a fly on the wall, wouldn't it?
I know.
At any of their gatherings, just to sit back. Sometimes there's like things in the literature where, or in memoirs or diaries where they've, you know, preserve some of the conversation, but it's not the same as like having, now we'd have it all on video, you know, everybody would be taking selfies of themselves.
It's so true.
We just have to go by what they thought to write down afterwards.
Yeah. I just think it's really interesting because, I was, I went through kind of a, do you know who Gertrude Bell is? Gertrude Bell. She's not.
Oh, Gertrude Bell.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was like an explorer.
Yeah.
She?
Yeah. She's like, she's not I mean, not in their group, but I found a connection because I was really into her because I thought she was so cool. I was like, she is traveling around the Middle East, a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, that's crazy. I've never heard of anything like that, especially then. And then I found a connection between her and, who was it? John Singer Sargent.
Really?
The painter. Yeah. He painted her. So she's kind of she's distantly in, I guess, associated with them, but I was like, this is so cool. Like all of my cool people are in the same group, all associated
well,
some ways.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like I said, I mean, London, they all knew each other. There was a party in London in 1913 and it was in the spring, and Gertrude and Alice were visiting London at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And George Moore, who was one of Yeats and Lady Gregory's friends,
he was in the Royal Household.
He was there, and Lytton Strachey was there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the one point in time where I have someone from each of my three groups, but I can't find anybody from the Algonquin Rescue that was in London that day and went to that party. I keep trying.
Yeah.
George S. Kaufman went to London, but it was later.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm still working on it. Someday, somebody came walking through, drove by outside or something. I've got to be able to get them together at some point.
Yeah.
But that's why I like John Quinn, because he kind of links them all.
He does.
The Algonquin Roundtable, but he was living in Manhattan. He must have been reading them in the paper.
Yeah.
You know, every day.
Right.
So he kind of is the link among all four of them, for me, at least.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Totally. Yeah, I just think they're all, I think they're all fascinating.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was so funny because I told you I was not excited about Hugh Lane when my boyfriend first mentioned him to me, but then when I got into the research, I couldn't put him down.
Uh-huh.
So.
Is there a good biography of him?
Of Hugh Lane,
yeah.
Not that I've read the Thomas Bodkin's. That's pretty good. And there's
Robert O'Byrne has the most recent one, just simply titled Hugh Lane. And of course, there's Lady Gregory's Hugh Lane's Life and Achievements, which is available for free online somewhere.
But I guess the majority of the stuff that I get is from, it's just kind of stuff you have to dig through, like Lady Gregory's journals, which honestly I have not read a whole lot about. I've read parts of it, But there's a lot of stuff in other, like, references and other books. And just kind of reading Irish Times articles, which I'm not sure how reliable they are, but they seem pretty reliable. And so, yeah, just a lot of, I mean, it's not stuff that you find, you can Google them and find immediately. It's just stuff you kind of have to dig through.
Yeah, it takes some more digging. See, and I found, when I started my, you know, there were all these interesting characters, but I found after I narrowed down seven or eight in each of the four groups, I had to stick with them because there were so many others, like Joyce, and I thought, no, you're going to spend half your days reading about, you know, Nathan McMinn or something, and you got to stick with the important ones.
Right.
So Hugh Lane popped up, but then when this friend of mine, who I told you her great uncle, I guess, went down on the Lusitania, and she had some research about him, and she said, well, you know, let's do a presentation together. So then I dug in and found everything I had on Hugh Lane and pulled it together and then went looking for some more stuff too. So that the presentation that I sent you, we contrasted how, you know, Hugh Lane was in the upper decks, and her, but that ship, the Lusitania, was a lot of immigrants used it to go back and forth because it actually, for being cheap, was really nice accommodation. You know, it wasn't like they were all thrown in a pit or something. I mean, they had rooms, and it was considered to be one of the better ones for the, you know, the lower class of traveler. But they all went down.
It didn't matter.
Hugh Lane was up there on that top deck. He went down too.
Right. So, but I thought it was kind of interesting that, like, the richer people could get lifeboats, had more access to the lifeboats.
I think, in fact, she had in there, and she found it somewhere, that when you looked at the loss of life among the three different classes, it was pretty consistent.
Pretty consistent, yeah.
It was about 30%, I think.
Yeah.
In each, and so it showed that, you know, it was actually kind of egalitarian.
Yeah.
Death comes to us all.
Yeah. And I've heard two different stories about Hugh Lane. That I heard that he locked himself in the closet and just waited for it to go down. But then I heard that he was, you know, helping people get on lifeboats and stuff like that.
There was a woman who was with him, a wealthy American, who survived and got in touch with Lady Gregory a few days after and told her, now this is the story that I heard, that they had been on deck together because they knew when it was hit, everybody could tell. And he said something like, this is not going to be good for us, you know.
Right.
And but then he went down to help mm-hmm. other people. Mm-hmm. That's what she said. Now, obviously, she might have told Lady Gregory that to make her feel better. You know, you never know.
Right.
So I'm trying to find here.
Is it Lucy Duff Gordon?
Sorry?
Was her name Lucy Duff Gordon? That name's sticking out in my head.
No, I think it was Allen.
Allen.
Woody Allen.
Lady Allen. I forget her first name.
Yeah, that was it, Lady Allen. I'm trying to find that chart that showed about who died. Yeah, there were 1960 on board and 767 survived. Mm-hmm. So almost 1,200 drowned. But 900 of those were never recovered. And when you break it down by first class, second class, and third class,
mm-hmm.
It's about 30-some percent from each. The survival rate was 30-some percent. So, you know, it's a matter of rich or poor. Actually, yeah, it was slightly higher for first class, about 3% higher, but not much.
Yeah.
So, you know, ask not for whom the bell tolls.
Right. Yeah.
Tolls.
Well, it's so funny. I found a picture of, I guess, that Lady Allen and her husband.
I
don't know if it was on the Lusitania or what, but it was just a funny picture. And it was just kind of like, I don't know. It was just, I have to send it to you or send you a link to it.
Yeah, send it to me. Lady Marguerite Allen.
Yes, that's who it is, Marguerite Allen.
Because he'd been playing cards with her.
Yeah.
And she was the wife of a Canadian shipping owner.
Yeah. And it's just so funny.
And he was getting them, they were going around getting people to donate to the Red Cross.
Yeah, it was a wealthy couple. And he just has this funny, the guy, or the husband has this funny, funny expression on his face. And Lady Allen is just looking like she's just like all just, you know, coiffed and just, I don't know. It's just a funny picture. And I was laughing at it and I was showing it to my boyfriend. I was like, this looks like a fun couple.
Yeah. Well, it says now, I'm looking at these notes that I took. She had been saved from the Lusitania, but she had two young daughters
who were drowned. They were twins,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, and she told Lady Gregory of being with him, and that he went back. She wrote to Lady Gregory or something, but that he was standing near her and her daughters, but he wasn't wearing a life belt,
right.
Life jacket, I guess. And he said, "This is a sad end for us all." And then he went down to assist other friends. So maybe he was helping the people in first class. I'm nice shot here.
Right.
According to what she told Lady Gregory. But, you know, on the other hand, you might think, she's not going to tell her something nasty.
Right.
Screaming, going, no, I don't want to die.
He was a coward. He's a selfish coward.
So, you never know.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's all I have about her, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, Marguerite Allen.
Yeah.
Must have been a horrible experience, that's for sure.
I can't imagine. I just can't imagine.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's... But this has been so much fun. Thank you so much for chatting with me.
This is great, yeah. I mean, my poor, lovely husband who's lived through all these writers, through all my research, he kind of gets tired of the stories after a while, you know? And there aren't many people who know about Hugh Lane.
No, there's not.
Not even many, you know about Lady Gregory or Yates.
Yeah, no.
Toss things in my classes, but my students are like, you know, who cares? All those pictures are in black and white. We don't care.
Right. And not even Irish people know about him, really, it seems like.
I know. Like, you know, Yates, yeah, they'll acknowledge that they've heard of him. But.
Right.
So, yes, it's always nice to talk to somebody who knows about the era and the time and the wonderful creative people of the time.
So, yeah.
And maybe someday we'll get to meet and we'll be able to sit around pub and have a few drinks.
Totally.
Yeah.
Thank you so much to Kathleen Dixon Donnelly for chatting with me about her research on Hugh Lane and the Irish Literary Revival. Check out her blog, Such Friends, at wordpress.com. We'll keep you up to date with her happenings with John Quinn. I hope to have her again on the show very soon. Thanks for listening. This is a Hotspur Media production.